coupled correlative material. When I was coming to PI, I was thinking, okay, how do I start intro here? Because these people are high energy mainly. So I should start with something very elegant and come up with a philosophy of science. So let me start with the two mainstream of the philosophy of science that if you go to the you know, the undergraduate college, if you take the course of philosophy of science, which I did when I was back in 20 years ago, maybe more than 20 years ago, actually, one of the philosophies of reductionism. So that you can, you know, I don't have to explain that. You can see that, you know, you can reduce into the fundamental particles. And the other one, there are only two categories, by the way. One is reductionism, the other is emergence. And that applies to the social science as well. So you can tell that emergence, the definition of emergence from this encyclopedia, and what do you call it, encyclopedia? Anyway, so it's not an encyclopedia. It's something, it's a philosophy-wise, this is the best place that you can get the definition of the word. And it says the emergent properties are characteristic of complex systems, which could not be predicted from the standard point of the pre-emergent stage. And that applies for the social science, as I said. So I think the things that we apply to us is the quantum emergency. So I'm going to talk about a new emergent quantum particle different from boson and fermions. And I don't have to explain to this audience what are non-abelian anions. So I'm not going to do that. And those particles can be found in the spin ligand. So the point of this talk is basically where we find those spin ligands. So, and then so far, people have been looking for, historically, it comes from the frustrated magnetic insulator. And they come with the different shapes and one characters and f orbitals and d orbitals and so on and so forth. Most of these things has been quite approximate. So you can get the spin ligand from approximate solutions until Kitaev comes and he said, well, you know, if you have this model, this problem is exactly solvable. But the difficulty is that these spin-spin interactions are bone dependent. And that sounds like, from a solid state point of view, it's extremely difficult problem because you will get the Heisenberg interaction rather than bone dependent interactions. But once you get it, then this is the spin ligand with the Majorana fermions, with G2 spin ligand, with the visons, and so on. And then smoking gun signature experimentally, that how do we know that it has a spin ligand? Because there's no local autoparameter. One way to get it, well, this is the way to get it, is to get the chiral edge mode, which will give us half quantized thermal hole conductivity. So the experimental signature of this will be basically that one. You know, in addition to other ones which are very indirect. And that was also predicted by the Kitaev, this genius person. Okay, so, and Kitaev was motivation, as you know very well from that paper, that he wanna actually get a topological quantum computation. So that was a motivation of this Hamiltonian, which can be exactly solvable. And there is the anions, and we want to build the quantum computers. And basically, I'm providing the hardware where I can find those materials which has this these properties. Okay, so how to realize the spin ligand in solid state material is this talk that contains this talk. So I'm going to go through some of the little bit of details. So solid state systems comes with a spin orbital lattice, and basically my talk is based on the spin orbit coupling in solid. And with this electron-electron interaction to be very strong in this case. And then, of course, the solid state comes with an electron, so that has charge, but I'll be ignoring this because I'll be working on an insulating system. So charge degree of freedom is totally frozen because it's a very, very molten insulator, very strongly insulating systems, but we'll be dealing with this part inside a solid, which has some periodic potentials. Okay, so this is one of the phase diagram that has been probably shown if anyone come here talking about spin orbit coupling. Basically, we have Hubbard interaction with the spin orbit coupling. And if you are looking at a very large Coulomb interaction between the electrons, we end up with this spin ligand. And what has been ignored in this is the crystal structures and magnetic field and so on and so forth, because these are basically a schematic phase diagrams. So depending on what we have in the crystal structures, we might end up with different type of the phases. So my focus is actually a spin ligand. Okay. And in the materials, we begin with the periodic tables. And Well, we need to have a strong spin-off coupling, meaning that will be underlying here, and then large Coulomb interactions, and we want to have a honeycomb structures. And candidate for the spin liquid are this particular compound that has been studied, and I'll be probably mainly focused on this ruthenium chloride G later on. But just want to give you a little bit of interest for those, I'm not sure how many students are here, but it's probably a good idea to remind ourselves what are the spin orbit coupling in a lattice and generic spin model in materials that how one can derive Leakey type interactions. And if I derive Leakey type interactions, what are the side effects? In other words, what other terms that we end up, and then how you can make Leakey type spin Leakey using a magnetic field. So that'll be an ABC of my talk. So I'll follow from that order. So let me remind you the spin orbit coupling, it's a relativistic effect. In the atomic spin orbit coupling, it's nothing but L that is. And you know that this is simply because that when the electron is moving around, that generate, because the charged object generates the electric field from the gradient of potential between these two, and that will couple to make the spin of its original spin, and it's better to see in this relativistic scheme, rest frame, and then that will read in the L dot S. It comes as atomic site I, and this lambda proportional to the atomic mass, atomic number, the fourth order, so heavier the atom, bigger the spin orbit coupling. That's why we are looking at the periodic table in the bottom of the periodic table, which has a larger atomic numbers. So if you put this, before you put it on a lattice, if you think about the one site, then yeah, so if you have a p orbitals, which is L equal to one, this is a quantum mechanics, a third year quantum mechanics, basically. If you have angular momentum of the one, then you have, well, force, I don't know. Who teaches, depending on your instructors. I taught this in the graduate school, I think. But anyway, L dot S, then you end up with L equal to one, spin half. Your total angular momentum is 3/2 and 1/2. And you can construct all the wave functions for each of the total spin moment. Again, but this is atomic site I, and there is no motion involved. Okay? So that's what we learn in a school. But one thing that you might want to remember is that when you consider in a lattice, you have not only a site, but so let's consider two sites. And then one can see the effect of spin orbit coupling on a hopping. For example, if I have a lattice structure like a scale lattice, where we have all the mirror symmetry, then you have px orbital and pz orbital, and then thinking about hopping between this site to that site, which can be written in this form, pz up to the px up, because I don't break the time reversal, I'm not allowed to flip the spin. So real spin is going to be up and up, and this t here is basically zero because of the symmetry of the px versus pz orbital. These are meter odd under the z, meter odd under the x, and so on. So you can see that because of a symmetry of the meter, that this is going to be zero. So there is no such hopping between the two. Okay? So when meter symmetry is broken, on the other hand, this becomes finite, and you will see that this has some impact in the Hamiltonian if you have a spin orbit coupling or not. So when I say the meter and so on, this axis or the structure of the lattice is not determined by the site I, but rather determined by other atoms inside a solid. So you can see this one is ideal perovskite, so-called. Like a strontium titanium oxide will have these structures, versus most of the oxide comes with orthorhombic modifications. So you have these oxygens are rotated and tilted, and that determines x, y, z axis of the site of the I that we are interested in. So let's go back our px and pz orbitals, and then imagine that I have rotated and tilted away from the c axis, then you end up with px and pz, because meter is broken, this t here become finite due to the broken meter. And now I'm still writing pz up, px up. Now look at this px up. Px up is belong to the total j of the minus half, jz of minus half. On the other hand, pz up belong to the jz of half. So if you write this in the basis of the total s basis, total j basis, this belongs to this spin half, total jz of half to a jz of minus half. So if you have a spin orbit coupling, this is a better basis. In this basis, this hopping is a spin flip hoppings. So you don't really flip the real spin, but you flip the pseudo spin. Okay? And that's allowed by the broken meter symmetry. So that two are have to be connected, otherwise we don't get such a term. And this becomes very important to derive the bond-dependent interaction. So the reason I'm saying this is that if you have a spin-orbit coupling and the proper lattice, then one can generate the bond-dependent interactions. So if I have atomic spin-orbit crystal structure, and then this looks like a Rajpa type of spin-orbit Rajpa type of the term, then you flip the pseudo spins. And if you write this in the momentum space and then have all the x-axis along this, then it'll get us something like this. It doesn't break the time reversal because it comes with I sigma y, and it's even under the k to minus k, but it shows the some spin-dependent terms, and then this sigma is written in the JZ basis, not the actual spin basis. If we break the inversion, then this term will change into the sign, and that's nothing but the Rajpa term. So that's how you can understand how the Rajpa comes in and so on and so forth in the solid state. So let's go into the d orbital, because the p orbitals are not very strongly interacting. So when you go to the transition metals, which is the d orbitals, that one has a electron-electron interaction, which is much stronger. And the reason for that is because they are much localized wave functions. So if you put the single d electron in a crystal field, in other words, in the octahedra like this, then as you learn from the atomic physics that there are five d orbitals, and that d orbital will split due to the Coulomb interaction between these oxygens and the transition metal in the middle. And that one break into so-called T2G and EG. And these are three of the d orbital versus two of the d orbitals. Okay, and they are looking something like this. So d orbitals, okay, so T2G and EG, so basically I didn't write it here, but it's a dxz, yz, xy. And then this one is going to call dx square minus y square. And the 3g square minus r square. So that one is just some harmonic, what do you call it? It's a YLM, spherical harmonics that we have learned. So you can rewrite that in terms of spherical harmonics. And they have energy level splitting due to this oxygen octahedra Coulomb interactions. So once you put the spin-orbit coupling on top of those crystal field, which is a lambda L dot S, remember that the d orbital here is L equal 2. Okay? And then S is half. So we are supposed to get 2 and half. 2 plus half is 5 half. 2 minus half is 3 halves. So total J is supposed to be 5 half and 3 half. But on the other hand, if the crystal field splitting is much larger compared to the spin-orbit coupling, this T2G, which is the three of these d orbitals here, would act just like a p orbital, except that the angular momentum is now flipped the minus 1 here. And that's because the minus signs are coming in here compared to the p orbital angular momentum. That's just the orbital structures. So once you have it, then T2G is splitting into, it's an angular momentum of 1. So instead of 3 half and 5 half, it'll split in half and 3 half, just like a p orbital. Okay? So that's the kind of basis that we have to start. So then you can see that J effective half basis, JZ equal half, is going to be again down, down, up instead of just like a p orbitals, this is going to be a py and p, py and px, and this will be a pz orbitals in the p orbital case. And then you have mixtures of up, up, downs in this j basis. So that's going to be in a solid state. So I have now in the, again, back to the j effective half basis, if I have a meter symmetry, again, xz and dxy, this is due to the meter. This is going to be a, this hopping between the two orbital is basically a zero. On the other hand, if I have orthorhombic lattice, then you have tilting and rotation, this is become finite. And then note that this xz to a xy orbital, which is real spin is up and up. But if I'm writing in the pseudo spin of the j equal half and minus half, xy up belong to the half here, xz up belong to the minus half. So if I write the basis of spin orbit coupled, total J basis, this will be a pseudo, the pseudo spin flip terms. So that's how you generate the sigma Y or sigma X. Flip terms are generated from the lattice and the spin-orbit coupling, not just the spin-orbit coupling. You need a proper lattice to get that.
So this pseudo spin 1/2 is a Kramers doublet?
Yes, pseudo spin half, this is a Kramers doublet. These two are Kramers doublets. Kramers partners each other. So it is a Kramers doublet, yes. Okay. So that's how this came out. So the intro that I give you is one way to generate, to get those spin flip terms. By the way, this hockey stick is so heavy. my wrist is so painful. Maybe I should use two hands now. Okay, so you have those hopping terms, and then what you do is that now you add a large U. So I have spin-orbit coupling with a proper lattice, and then you add a large Coulomb interaction between the electron, and then take the large U limit and do the perturbation theory, which is basically a second order perturbation, then one end up with this Kitaev terms here. Okay? So this term is basically coming from the terms that I have introduced. So without those proper lattice, that's why it appears only on the honeycomb lattice. You have to go through the honeycomb, press the strong spin-orbit coupling and strong Coulomb interactions, then one can do a perturbation theory, second order perturbation theory, then one ends up with this Kitaev interaction, which are bond dependent. In other words, when you have honeycomb lattice here, this will have only SZ-SZ interactions. This will have SX-SX interaction, YY interactions. And in reality, of course, this is not going to just get the bond dependent interaction. Unfortunately, in real material, one ends up with also Heisenberg interactions. So that will be a SI dot SJ. Okay? By the way, I'm assuming that the audience has the Kitaev spin-Likert, has seen it before. I'm not sure if that's the case, but well, Roger had his, you know, his hands, so I'm just assuming that you know the Kitaev interactions, and that gives this spin-Likert with the Majorana fermions.
So what's this JH?
Okay, so JH here is a Hund's coupling. So this term here, if you do the perturbation theory, this will proportional to Hund's coupling. In other words, you need the multi-orbitals. Remember that you go backwards here. So this one in here. So we are dealing with, there are five electrons in the d orbitals. So you have up, up, down, down, and up. So this is a particular occupation. Electron number is also constrained. So that's why it's extremely difficult to find those candidates. So then you have this up field, and then this is one left. But these are going to come in the perturbation theory. This one in the, you have another site here. This will go in up to here. And then you have Hund's coupling that's gonna be your intermediate state. So that's the ground state. And then you go to the, this is the lowest energy state. And then your highest excited state will have to be all summed up in your perturbation theory. And those intermediate state will have, depending on the Hund's coupling, like these are up, up, and down, down, and so on. So that's actually a Hund's coupling.
So is it always possible?
This term, if you do it just this way, this term is always positive. Therefore, this term is always negative. That's how it is done in the indirect, meaning that this one is going through the auction. So here, TO square is the hopping from here. This is a transition metal site to oxygen, and then oxygen to another transition metal site. So this is so-called indirect hopping between the metal, transition metals through the auctions or p orbital, through the p orbitals, then that's going to be always negative, and this is going to be Heisenberg interaction. So, yeah.
You said that the Hamiltonian is only allowed on the honeycomb lattice.
This one is allowed in the honeycomb lattice, also allowed in a triangular lattice as well, as long as you have 90 degree of this p orbital sitting in. So this one here, between these two, you need a 90 degree indirect exchange. Okay, so from here to here is 90. So this one, you can get it also in a triangular lattice, for example. So as long as you have a 90 degree of this indirect intermediate site, which form a 90 angles, then you can get these terms. And then you have spin-orbit coupling. Yes.
You can get the Kitaev.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. So you can always get that. This term is actually pretty common, I must say. It's just that they are not very big. So in materials, you always have them. It's not like you don't, as long as you have a spin-orbit coupling, reasonable size of spin-orbit coupling, and then you have an exchange pass, which is going through this intermediate state, which, you know, in this middle of those, these are the two transition metals, for example, iridium, iridium, and this is oxygen, then that'll go through it, then you always have it. The question is whether they are big or not. That's the problem. So, and then these are the candidates where the iridium is sitting in this one, two, three, and oxygen is sitting in this one here. And sodium is sitting in the somewhere in the middle of those ones here, so they are not very important. They are just charged reservoir to make the iridium to be d5. So there are 5 electrons in the d orbital, which is set by the sodiums. So these are so-called charged reservoir. Okay. So Hund's coupling is important. Without Hund's, we don't get the guitar atoms. And then U is the Coulomb interaction, Hubbard interactions. Okay, so that was calculated by that paper. And then what we have found is that actually they have missed something very important. So if you do it properly, well, I'm sure they did properly, but they missed it. If you do it all the terms, keeping everything, then it's not just the Kitaev terms and the Heisenberg terms. By the way, Heisenberg is actually very small, so you really end up with very close to Kitaev terms. Not only that, there is so-called gamma term, which appears also bone-dependent. So this is a honeycomb shape again. And then these are the octahedras that I have described. And then if I'm looking at this red bond here, the red bond here is going to give us SZ and SZ. So there is a Kitaev interaction that gives us a spin-spin interaction through the ZZ component here. But there's another interaction, which we call the gamma. Gamma term comes as SX, SY. And then SY, SX. So there is this additional frustration term that appears in a gamma. And then as you move along the blue bond, the Kitaev term changes too. So this blue bond is the X here. So it'll be SX, SX, Kitaev. And then gamma will become then SY, SZ, SZ, SY. And then X term, you know, again, the green bond will be SY, SY, Kitaev. And then gamma will come as SZ, SX, and then SX, SZ, okay? So that's the term that is, that appears if you just do the calculation. So, and it took 5 years, somebody noticed that this term has been missed, and this is also proportional to the Hund's coupling. So without the Hund's coupling, these two are both gone. Okay, so that's the generic spin model in a large U limit. And now let's see what's the phase diagram look like, and then see if there is a Kitaev interaction. So I'm plotting only for a positive gamma here. Okay, so let's ignore the negative gammas because antiferromagnetic gamma is relevant for the material that I'm going to talk about. So only for the positive gamma, and then I'm setting up the angle in such a way that the gamma is cosine theta and so on. So these are the place where the phase diagrams are Heisenberg, negative Kitaev, positive Kitaev. Let's see this is a classical solution. I have to rotate because the reason. So here's a classical phase diagram. Classical spin will all order. But note that here, which is a negative, which is a ferromagnetic Kitaev, you end up with 1, 2, 3, 4 phases are meeting here. In fact, that there is a negative gamma will give you another one here. So there is a 5 phases or 6 are meeting here. And then there's 1, 2, 3 here, positive Kitaev. Heisenberg give us antiferromagnetic matter, magnets, and then ferromagnetic magnet. In the middle of the two, there are various different phases appears. In addition to a standard antiferro and ferro, we have zigzag order, which is the zigzag ferro looking like. So it's a zigzag chains with a ferromagnet. Stripes, which is basically these things here. The ferro ones, ferromagnetic aligned, parallelly aligned spins forming like this, and then the other direction. And then these are called 120. Meaning that you can imagine having a triangle here, and that triangle make 120, and then there's another triangle in a honeycomb make another 120. So these are the pretty complex phase diagram. And then of course, this spin liquid are not very stable in a classical system because it's a spin liquid. It's a liquid meaning that you don't have any magnetic ordering. And so in the classical system, those are going to be, you know, coming in some different magnetic order state depending on the perturbation that you added. So that's a classical calculation. And, yeah.
Can I go back 1 second?
Yeah, sure. Not this one, I guess. Yeah. There you go.
The gamma term comes also with XYZ?
Yes. So gamma term is also bone dependent.
So symmetry-wise, is the gamma term the same as the Kitaev?
So when the gamma term comes XY, Kitaev is Z.
Right.
When Kitaev is Y, this is XZ.
So it has all the symmetry.
Yes, it has all the symmetry of the honeycomb that preserved. Okay. So it is allowed by the symmetry in ideal honeycombs. If you break ideal honeycomb, you end up with other terms.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
Breaks the spin fluid, Philip symmetry.
Spin the Philip symmetry?
Yeah, like the Eisenflip.
What is Eisenflip?
It's just like you flip S, X, S, Y, but you flip S, they just type of features.
Okay, it breaks.
You mean the SX, SY change the sign, minus, minus? Yes, it does, because depend, you know, if you break the gamma Y, but you don't have that in this ideal honeycomb to begin
with. Right.
Yes. So this has all the symmetry of the honeycomb lattice that you can have, because honeycomb has the C2 here, and then C2 there, and the meter in there, and so on. So that has everything here. So this one here, the phase diagram here, is plotted in this parameters here. The angle of cosine theta, so theta along this line here is going to be pi by 2. So along this boundary here, there is no gamma. Okay? So this is a JK, Heisenberg-Gitaev. And then as I move along the center, that's the pure gamma term. So in this point is only a gamma, and then there's no K and gamma, Gitaev and the Heisenberg terms. And that point here, gamma is also kind of interesting because you see that there are at least four phases are meeting at the gamma point. Now, if you put this in a quantum model, which is a 24 psi cluster here, basically that's the shape of the cluster that one can have with all the symmetry that you have, but with a finite size, that's the phase diagram we end up. And now here is the antiferro-Gitaev, and one can see that there's a little bit of phase, very tiny, extremely narrow range of Gitaev appears. And then if you go into the negative side, which is a ferromagnetic, there is, again, extremely small range of the Gitaev that appears. But it's very, very tiny. And then here there is something we just call a spiral, which we don't know what they are. So we just have to say something, and then we just thought, okay, you know, the most likely might be a spiral, but it actually turns out to be wrong. But in any case, there are a lot of things that appears in the blue range here, which is very difficult to analyze, nearby the ferromagnetic Gitaev. And most of candidate material that we have been suggesting, in fact, sitting inside this blue range. So the nature is not very kind to us. And we found that extremely narrow range of the Gitaev spin ligand. So that was a little bit disappointing. Let's go to our materials now. So this Gitaev materials were kind of, until 2014, it was limited to the iridium oxide. Okay? This sodium-2-iridium-04 and lithium-2-iridium-04. And now, in some point here, we have suggested that maybe you don't have to be that heavy. Like iridium in the periodic table, atomic number is 77, so it's very heavy, and Spinovi coupling is large. Ruthenium is actually a Z, it's 44. It's much smaller compared to the iridium. But given the honeycomb structure, one can show that the effective Spinovi coupling is very large. So maybe possible that one can have this in the ruthenium chloride 3, which comes as a honeycomb structure again. It's a layered. So this is ruthenium chloride 3. And then there's another layer with the ruthenium chloride 3. So forget all the layers. You can just start with the two-dimensional layer. And then ruthenium comes with 3 plus. Again, there are 5. The electrons. And then we have said that, well, you know, in this microscopic model that you derive, then you end up with, again, the dominant Gitaev and gamma interactions. So maybe this has a better chance to find the Gitaev spin ligand. So on the other hand, when you actually look at the material, what happened is that all of them we have seen it so far has a magnetic ordering. And in particular, they are very close to zigzag magnetic order. Remember that ferromagnetic chains along the zigzag chains. So those are called zigzag magnetic order below the TC. And then TC is approximately about a 7 Kelvin here. So below the 7 Kelvin, it has a magnetic ordering. Above the 7 Kelvin, something interesting going on. But at that time, this is 2015 and 16, we are not sure what we are seeing exactly. So these are some neutron scattering data where, you know, it's basically telling us that there is a magnetic order state. OK, and after the magnetic order state was suggested or reported, people start kind of speculating that, well, maybe the system is magnetically ordered, but it is close to the Gitaev spin ligand. In other words, if I am in a phase space in the zigzag order state, if I tune it around a little bit, I might end up with the Gitaev spin ligand. So that was suggested based on these two experiments. One of them was the Raman spectrums, where they see some continuum features. In other words, you have spin excitations, which are very continuum because you don't have magnetic order, so there's no well-defined magnetic excitations. you end up with very broad spectrums. And another was some kind of inelastic neutron scattering. You see this blob here, something like this here, and that survives all the way to above the nil temperature, above the magnetic ordering temperature, which corresponds to this AP here, and then this peak here that survives. And that's the signature of the Kitaev spinnaker. Okay? So that's probably rather difficult to see it for those who haven't looked at the neutrons much. But you know, when you see something like this, one can immediately say, well, there's some frustration going on in the system. So the idea was the following. And the idea was, well, maybe I can destroy the magnetic order, because these are magnetic orders. But above the order temperature, and you see some kind of frustrated behavior here. And so the idea was, OK, maybe I can kill the magnetic ordering by applying a magnetic field. And then the system is governed by the Kitaev spin interactions. Okay? So that's where we studied. So that's one of the things that several people have taken. I'm just showing you one last experiment. And there were other experiments, but maybe they are not as exciting as this one, I think. So it's a thermal hole transport. Remember, the Kitaev suggested if you have the Kitaev spin leakage, the thermal hole conductivity, which is this kappa xy, has to be quantized. And the quantized number comes with this universal constant, Boltzmann constant, divided by h bar. And then there's this number, which has to be fixed. C is going to be basically half. So that's the smoking gun experiment if one has the Kitaev spin leakage. And that's a chiral spin leakage. And then this half is extremely important because it's a Majorana fermion rather than complex fermion. It's a half of the complex fermion. So what they have found was that indeed, if you apply the magnetic field along, this is the kappa, this is a ruthenium chloride 3 honeycomb plane, you apply the field with a little bit of tilting angle. You can see that there is a little tilting angle here, like a 60 degrees. And then this is a plane field. What they see that this zigzag magnetic order as a function of this in-plane magnetic field, although the real field is a little bit tilted, as a function of this magnitude, the zigzag magnetic order disappears. And then since I have applied the field, eventually all of this spin will be polarized, because magnetic field, there's a Zeeman term, and they will just polarize. So this will be a polarized state, which is a totally boring state, because it's a classical state. It's a product state, basically. You connect it to the, adiabatically connect to the product state. But they do see the something in the middle, which is very interesting, because what they found is that in this range of the field and then range of this temperature, that's a kappa xy as a function of temperature. This is for a given field, like a 7 tesla, 4.6 teslas of the perpendicular field. So you're fixing a magnetic field here and there, and as a function of temperature, they are seeing this is window of 3 to 6 Tesla. Okay, it's not the zero Tesla here, zero temperature. Zero temperature, you can't even couple to. You need some kind of temperature to couple to the thermal transport. You basically couple to the phonon, and then phonon will couple to the spin. So that's why this should be seen in the certain finite temperature. And then that's within this area here. They do actually see a half quantized thermal hole conductivities. So this become one of the big thing, because it's probably one of the first evidence of the Majorana, chiral Majorana fermions in any of the spin system, actually in any of the solid state, because there was a fractional quantum hole, one of those five half state in quantum hole state. And there was some experimental report that has suggested that they have seen some non-abelian particles there, but that's a charged system that coming from a sigma xy, the quantum hole kind of thing. Here is a spin system where charge is totally frozen, and then we still see some kind of, you know, entropy carrying object comes with a half of the quantized values. So this was something that was very exciting, and people are still trying to reproduce this data. And I know at least three different experimental groups are trying to get it into here and to see if this is really the case. I think that if this is convinced, that this guy will get the Nobel Prize. This is that big. I'm sure that a lot of people will agree. Okay, but of course, it has to be reproduced. And then theoretically, how we understand is another question. Because real material is not a pure Gitaibora. As I said, it magnetically orders at the low temperature. So in this real Ruthenium chloride 3, you know, as we have said, it's not going to be pure Gitaib. So we know that this part here, which is a zero temperature with a zero field, this is not a Gitaib material at all. I mean, Gitaib interaction is dominant, but you have other interactions. And if you have other interactions, as I show you earlier, this extremely narrow Gitaib is totally wiped out, and then you set the magnetic order state. So what happened? And earlier here, people actually have looked at the pure Gitaib model, including the In Chen, which has looked at the antiferromagnetic Gitaib part. So this is a two different, this is a pure Gitaib. You can imagine I have pure Gitaib model. And then this is antiferro, the positive plus K and the minus K. Apply the magnetic field along the 111, meaning that this plane. So this is a ruthenium chloride 3, for example. Well, not the ruthenium chloride 3, which is not pure Gitaib. Let's say the pure Gitaib with a honeycomb layer, and then you apply the field perpendicular to the honeycomb plane. Then this is a field direction. You can see that antiferromagnetic Gitaibs. This is Gitaib spinning can survive all the way here, which is 0.2 field, which is rather big. And then there's something going on. It's not a polarized state. These are called intermediate state. And you can ask In Chen to what are these phase before it become polarized. So there's intermediate phase appears in the antiferromagnetic Gitaib. On the other hand, ferromagnetic Gitaib here, this is almost immediately destroyed by the field, and then you end up with polarized state. Okay? So polarized state, again, it's a classical state, as I said. So Gitaib seems to be extremely fragile if you have a magnetic field. Okay, so what happened was that I'm going to get my idea that we just have done it just this time. That's my recent thing. So let's go back. Look at the ruthenium chloride 3. So these are the proposed parameter sets. This is 2017. You know, you can see all the references here. And now this table is three times longer. This is 2017. 2019 is probably all the way here. And then might be even longer as time goes, it builds up and builds up. A lot of people jumping into it and then do the some contributions here. And what you see here is that, in fact, if you look at a lot of this work, which are based on the DFT, ab initio calculation, ED, and neutrons, and so on, yes, Gitaib term is here, which is ferromagnetic Gitaib. And then the gamma term that I have introduced comes as antiferromagnetic, positive, and they are as big as the Gitaib in terms of size. So this antiferromagnetic gamma and negative Gitaib probably is a starting point. Instead of pure Gitaib, one should start from ferromagnetic Gitaib plus the antiferromagnetic gamma as the phase, as a starting Hamiltonian. So here is an idea. So let's say the dominant interaction is the ferro Gitaib plus antiferro gamma, and then other small interactions, remember that if this was a spin liquid, any other small interactions will generate the magnetic order. So magnetic orders are probably coming from any other small interactions, such as Heisenberg terms or something else. And then we apply the magnetic field and kills this magnetic order set by this small interaction. And once I kill that, we reveal the phase set by this ferromagnetic Gitaib, antiferromagnetic gamma. So then, well, does this model support any spin liquid? That's the question. Okay. So, and that question, in fact, led us something more exciting than I thought. So here is the starting point. So what we did was that, okay, we need a zigzag ordering because I know that we are looking at here. So I'm near the main negative ferromagnetic Gitaib. Again, back to this blue range that I told you that most of the material are sitting in, we just call the spiral at that point in the 2014. But what we have noticed at that time is that if I have so-called trigonal distortion, which is this octahedra distorted in a certain way. In real material, they always exist, by the way. And we have found that you need, you know, these are the all symmetry allowed terms, Gitaib and gamma and Heisenberg. There's additional terms allowed by the symmetry due to the distortion, which we call the gamma prime. And so if I have XY here, and this is ZZ, now this will take other terms. For example, XY, now here XZ, YZ, all of terms are here. Okay, so that's how the gamma prime coming in. And gamma prime is small because it's coming from only a distortion, and distortions are rather small. Otherwise, it's going to be totally different from honeycomb. So if I have a gamma prime here, what we have noticed nearby this area, the ferromagnetic tie plus the gamma. So here's the gamma, and this is the ferromagnetic tie point in the middle, ferromagnetic tie point. As I include the gamma prime, which is a ferronegative, then I end up with more zigzag here. So this zigzag is appearing along this line here. I just have a little bit of different parameterization, so sorry for that, but this area will be dominated by zigzag order. So the gamma prime will stabilize the zigzag order. Okay? So I'm interested in the, again, ferromagnetic tie plus the gamma, which is in this area along here. I'm gonna set the Heisenberg even zero, and then I just turn on the small gamma prime. This part here will be just become zigzag order state. So then what happened? Okay, so again, back to the 24-side ED, I stabilize zigzag here by introducing trigonal distortion. So instead of something I don't know, now it becomes a zigzag. And then we'll discuss I don't know phase again, back again. So that's zigzag ordering. And then I'm gonna be looking at the parameter, which is the gamma and then kitab here along this diagonal, this very narrow range of the phase diagram. Okay, a lot of interesting things are going on along that area too, but let's just look at this area, which is relevant for the alpha routinian criteria, where they see the half quantized thermal hole. Okay, so this is our ED calculation, the result of that. So let me explain this. So again, this point here is going to be gamma over K to be a one here. So the ratio between the gamma and the kitai, the size-wise, it's the one here. And then this is the zero, is the pure kitai point here. So pure kitai point is going to be this red color here is a kitai spin liquid. And this one is a magnetic field. Okay. Along the 111 direction, tilted away from this plane here, that's experimental setup. Experimentally, they have tilted the magnetic field like this. And they have used like a 30 degree, 60 degree, and 45 here, and I only tilted by 5 degrees for the numerical reasons, because it's very difficult to calculate along the 111. So we have 5 degree here, and then this one 90, meaning along that direction. So I have two data sets here, two angles, one angle is 5 degree, another angle is a 90 degree. So when you have 5 degree here, what we are seeing is that, and then this triangle and then circle, triangle and the circles are the second derivative of the free energy with respect to the H and this parameter gamma over the K. So there's basically a susceptibility. Whenever you see this peaks, one can tell that there is some phase transitions. And we have more data sets here because we are so worried that this might be a, you know, some artifact. But what we are seeing, at least within the 24-side ED, beyond that we cannot, you know, claim anything. Within the 24-side numerical calculation, we see that this red color kitai spin liquid survives all the way here. So this is gamma here, basically finite gamma, stabilize the kitai in the middle of the intermediate magnetic field. So remember the earlier numerical study was done in here. It's a pure kitai without the gamma. So this is a pure kitai as a functional field, and they just go from kitai to a pure polarized state. So this state become extremely fragile, as I said, we reproduce that. But if you have a finite gamma introduced, then this kitai spin liquid is going to be appearing in the intermediate spin, intermediate magnetic field. And this zigzag order is stabilized by the gamma prime, the trigonal distortion. Yeah.
This is on the horizontal axis, gamma or gamma prime?
Gamma. Yeah. So this is for a fixed gamma prime.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll discuss the gamma. It's a very important. Gamma prime is fixed, which is about 3% of this value. It's extremely small. So when I have very small gamma prime, I can wipe out this I don't know phase, become a zigzag. I'll go back to that state again. So this is the zigzag due to the finite fixed gamma prime. And this is gamma over K. So I'm moving from here to there. And then we apply the field along this direction. And then if the field is along the in-plane, then this kitai spin liquid is extremely confined within a very small range. And then there is a directly polarized state, and then there is a polarized state. So it has a huge anisotropy as a function of magnetic field angles. And there are some anisotropy in a plane too, but I don't, that's just a preliminary at the point. And what I want to say is that this intermediate field kitai spin liquid that has seen in the experiment is in fact that can be stabilized when the gamma is finite.
Sir, yeah. How do you tell it's types been equivalent?
Well, basically, this one is we are saying that these are adiabatically connected within the 24 site. Of course, you can go beyond that, and then there might be some other things pop out. But going beyond this size is extremely difficult. And 32 site was done, and you know the other side, and we see something similar in the other side. So we are very confident up to the 32 site.
But what is that circle line?
Where the this one here?
No,
the line of circles.
Yeah, the line of circle.
This line of circle?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's something interesting. So this color here is the Plaque order parameter.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So Plaque operator is basically conserved quantity at the pure GitHub, and that's one by the exact resolvable model. And so that's the one in here. And this chi of the chi is the susceptibility, second derivative of free energy with respect to this variable, is going to follow along these lines here pretty nicely. And then that deviates from here. So it's just telling us that there is some fluctuations going on within this white area here. And then if you look at the zigzag here, this Plaque operator jumps from positive to a negative. So this color is not a just decoration. It is actually a Plaque operator values. This is one in here. Here it becomes minus one third. So I'll come back to that. And then the same thing here. The colors are representing the finite Plaque. Polarized state does not mean that the Plaque operator is zero. I just choose the color white because referee was saying that, you know, you don't want to have the colors, so just remove it. So I said,
but is it?
Why? Anyway, I just removed it.
Was it red or blue?
It was red.
Okay.
This was red and this was blue.
Okay.
So this was actually covered up because dumb referee anyway has asked to do it. So, oh, now here it comes. You can see that? I now have put it back here. So you can see this, the WP. And then you did see that the white color here. So WP goes to zero along those lines, those white dots here. They are actually following the where WP becomes zero, approximately. So things are, and then same thing here. You see this white line here? They follows the chi of those guys appearing along that lines. So if you cut it along one of those gamma over K, and this is again fixed the gamma prime, here's a gamma prime, and then I set the Heisenberg the zero. If you keep the Heisenberg finite with a small number, none of this changes. So Heisenberg doesn't really play a much role up to the 3% of whatever the gamma prime. And then you can cut it off here. This is the susceptibility chi of H and the magnetization. And you see this sharp peaks between zigzag and guitar spin like it. Zigzag is not very nice zigzag because endpoint is not as sharp as this point. This is a polarized state. And this is the static spin-spin correlator. So you can tell which one is ordered, which one is not ordered. Guitar spin like it doesn't have any, it's very diffusive. Spin-spin scattering is very diffusive here. And this one has a very nice polarized state. This is zigzag orders, but it's not as strong as that's why probably you can kill it by a small magnetic field. Anyway, so intermediate field heat type is found when the gamma is finite, and that's how we have.
So what happens when you change the sign of K?
If you change the sign of heat type, you're back in the other, totally other limit, and there are many different phases appears along the way. Yeah, it's not like you have like a, so if I going from here and change the sign along the heat type, you have to go through at least two different phase diagram, phase transitions. Yeah, so there's, it's not connected at all.
So deep in the paramagnet, the WP is finite, right?
Deep in the paramagnet here, yes.
Yeah.
WP is finite.
So it becomes zero near the...
Yes, but this finite is very meaningless. In that sense, I sort of agree with the referee because, you know, this is because you apply the field.
Yeah,
so they apply the field, you will get a sum number. And this is the different directional field, you will actually get a negative one.
Yeah,
what's more interesting is this white coloring that is following along the...
Seems to near the critical point.
What's really interesting is that this white line, it follows so when H is 1, 1, 1. Remember when H is 1, 1, 1, I told you that there is a numerical reason that we didn't present, but the data, it looked like you have upper field appears like this, follow this line, white lines. And then low field follow here, and then you have lots of things are going on along within the guitar spin like it. So that line is has some physical meaning. Yeah. unfortunately, we can't present in the published data. It's there. Okay, good. So we've done with the DMLG. So that was a 24-site ED with the C3, the honeycomb symmetry. This breaks the honeycomb symmetry. So this is just a two-leg ladder. It's a simplest geometry that one can have. One can add a three-leg, four-leg, and so on. So this is, again, a Heisenberg term. I set the zero, and gamma prime is fixed. Now it's an angle. We have more data sets, 0 and 5 and 10 and 90 here. This is, I'm just showing SSXX correlators. We have the entanglement spectrum and so on. A lot of things are done, but basically it's the same thing. You have zigzag orders here and guitar spinnaket and polarized state. And then you change the angle here, okay? So this is a zero degree can be done in the ladder. So now this line here is capped in here. You can see that here, those lines. Up to the 10 degree and then disappears in the 90. But that's not the where the trans. So this lines here is the where chi of h and chi of phi will diverge. So susceptibility divergence is kept by this color here. So there's no transition here, but you still have this fluctuations that spin-spin fluctuations actually knows that there was something going on at the angle of the zero. So reminiscence are still kept. If I'm looking at along this vertical lines, so there is a strong field angle dependence that's seen, and then this place here, strong spin fluctuation in a polarized state. So even though it's a polarized, it's not very trivial polarized. Eventually, it's going to be older state here. So that's going to be classical. But you know, in this middle range, you have still magnetization or something interesting going on along that lines. So here's a zigzag, and then this is guitar spin liquid in the middle here, and then there is a polarized state with some strong fluctuations that's appearing, even in the polarized state. So one requires a huge field to get the polarizations on this system. So, and then that's this is chi of E, and then this is, again, SSXS. This is basically the same thing, and you can see the guitar spin. Okay, that's why this color is sort of black.
So yeah. For larger field, does one have to worry about like other terms of the Hamiltonian allowed by symmetry?
In a larger field?
Yeah, like, you know, here I guess you're assuming like some Zeeman coupling to the spins.
Yes.
But I guess if you just, based on symmetry, you break time reversal, some, you got some direction.
Right.
There could be like some three spin.
No, three spin terms are coming actually when you take the smallest field. So three spin terms that Kitaev added is the limit where the Zeeman term is very small. So that's why this part here, somewhere here, with the three spin terms, what Kitaev did works it only here at a tiny, tiny field. So if you have a Zeeman term, you take it as a perturbation very, very small, then you will have a very tiny term set appears here. Yeah, so Zeeman term is just the most physical.
Yeah, because I'm just worried that this, you know, this is a pseudo spin, right? That's, you know, your Hamiltonian is just...
Yes, so yes, correct.
Why should the...
Very good, very good. So even though it's a pseudo spin, you can actually show it's related to what Chen was asking earlier, that this is a Kramer's doublet.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the magnetic field couples is just like a spin half, except the G factor can be different. So G factor we have taken G factor as a 2. In other words, it's like even though it's a pseudo spin, the way that the Zeeman term couples is exactly the same as a spin half. In the experiment, although G factor, of course, is deviates slightly from the G equal 2, because G equal 2 is where you don't even have a spin over coupling. So in the J equal half basis, you still have G factor 2. In experiment, it's slightly different between the in plane and an out of plane. It slightly differ by 1 point something to 2 point something. Yeah, so you can still do the same theory. So if you have a much higher field here, I wouldn't worry about those terms because you are basically polarizing everything. Yeah, so probably here is more worrisome. And there has been an experiment up to the 65 Tesla, which is very high field compared to Kitaev. You know, because remember the half quantized ones can be killed by 7 Tesla. And even you kill by the magnetic order by 7 Tesla, you go all the way to the 65 Tesla, you don't get the polarized state. this experiment to show that magnetism never saturates by to the half, even with the 65 Tesla. So that's already telling there's something non-trivial going on in this particular system. And that is also true in this calculation too. You need a pretty high field to get anything polarized. And these are all numerically done, so we are still, you know, waiting someone to do more analytical understanding. Okay, so now let me get back to the earlier question that what happens if I set the gain gamma prime equals zero. Remember, there was a phase that I just called it I don't know, and that phase is something interesting. So these are very preliminary, and then none of these are published, but I'd like to address here, so, you know, I want to see if anyone can get something on this. So what is the phase set by the minus ferromagnetic type and the positive gamma? If I put the gamma prime, it will immediately become a zigzag order. So something, this phase is very non-trivial, but it's very fragile. So what happened? Okay, so first the DMLG result on the two-leg stripe geometry that I set the J equals zero, theta is along the 1, 1, 1, gamma prime is zero, so there is no zigzag ordering. That's what we get. So this is SSSS correlator. Spin-spin correlator is totally black, and there is some transition appears here, and then it's totally black again. And then SSSS is same as YY because it's a geometry, X and Y are the same. Z is different because of the stripe geometry. And then ZZ again, when H equals zero, is a black and black. So we don't get any spin-spin. So in other words, there is no magnetic order. There is no magnetic order. There is no magnetic order. So we call that K gamma SL because here is a pure G-type, here is the gamma equal to the K, and then pure gamma is all the way here, which we haven't checked it yet. We have checked that, but we didn't know what to call it. We haven't analyzed that. And if you look at the flux, the Plaquet operator, again, it has a red here, so it's a one in here. And then this number is close to, again, minus 0.3. Even in the stripe geometry, 24 side, it's the same. We look at even WW correlator because you can do it in IDMLG and then, you know, big DMLG. And then we've gone to up to 400 size here. And here, correlators are totally ordered. And then there's a, you know, big jump here. By the way, this looks very close to transitions in many ways. And then there's something going on. We just call it K gamma SL. Okay. Now, we look at the static structure factors. This was done it earlier, in fact. So this is the now Kyogitaev, ferromagnet, to anti-ferromagnet here. And then there is a pure gamma. And then gamma equal to K is around here. And this is very similar to what neutron has seen it, by the way. So we are very confident that all of these are very similar to the minus K plus the gamma. And the Kyogitaev model, if you look at the specific hit, is signaled by a two peaks, two hump or two peaks. So there's a double peak appears here in the Kyogitaev models, and that is coming from the fact that you have one bisons, and then this is related bisons, and then the other one is the bandwidth set by the Majorana fermions. And if you are going along this direction up to the gamma, in fact, we do see these double peaks appearing here. There is something to do with still, you know, kind of spin liquid. We don't see any of the order state, even in the static correlators here. And then it has some double peaks here, so maybe there is some bisons and there is some Majorana still, despite that there is a force transition between the two. So we just tell that, well, there might be a wide range of the spin liquid. And if I look at the bison gap, which is set by this point here, you can see that it moves towards the higher. So I think that this interpretation of this is that probably if I add a gamma, the bison gap actually gets even bigger, and then probably jumps at some point. Now, we've got back to the ED calculation. And then what we found, something quite interesting, because now we look at the, so here's a pure Kyogitaev again, here. And then we look at this in the momentum space. So these are energy spectrum in a momentum space, a momentum that we can access within 24 side, okay? And you see that the pure Kyogitaev, Q equal to zero, or K equal to zero is a ground state here. This is E minus E naught, and then so that's the ground state. Now, when I'm moving along that side, go through the force transition here, inside the Kyogitaev gamma SL, we do actually find that this threefold degeneracy pops out at a finite momentum. So then what we did was that we just take this state, we have to do something to get that state, because these are degenerate. So we have to add a little bit of random potential to pick up this space and then calculate the WP expectation value on the honeycomb. Well, we found that it has a nice structures like this. This corresponds that, and the other corresponds that, and this. So these are the allowed symmetry, allowed the W shapes that one can have. All of these are negative, by the way, and then average corresponds to minus 1/3 that I have said earlier. So it seems like it has a translational symmetry broken state, but doesn't have magnetic order. It looks like Visons are crystallized. So there's a small, so, and then one that we have noticed is that this K gamma itself, which is wiped out by the gamma prime, it will set up the zigzag ordering. If I put a small anisotropy, it lifted the degeneracy, and then it's gone. If I have a lag geometry, they seem to appear in a small lag, but if I make the size of the system like 400, it starts to disappear. So it doesn't appear in the lag geometry either. There's a strong finite size effect that appears and so on. But we do see this repetitively if I have a nice 24-site ED. So something is going on in this K gamma itself, and I think that further studies are required. I just want to point it out, to remind you, this is again back to the Kitaev. That phase, in fact, is very similar to this phase, two-third phase that Kitaev has analyzed. So this is a classification of the different Visons state. And of course, the lowest state is going to be the no vortex. But once you start having a vortex, the vortex state can have different patterns. One of them, the one that I just show you, corresponds to this, except that WP is actually a minus one in these colors. We are not getting anything minus one and zero. We are getting something like a minus 0.2 and the minus 0.4, on average to be minus 0.3. But the pattern-wise, it's very close, this phase six. So that's still something that I think one can think about, why the gamma terms stabilize, one of those which are energetically not favorable in the pure Kitaev. Okay, with that, I'm going to just summarize. So I think that routinian chloride is indeed very near the spin leakage, even possibly have a two spin leakage. That's why when I put the title, I had a Kitaev spin leakage, and I had S in there. So there are probably even two. Majorana fermion G2 are coupled because gamma will introduce the strongly coupled spin. But these phases are probably adiabatic, at least within 24, seems like connected to the pure Kitaev under the field. Some of the outlooks that we have looked up is that one can also build up the higher spin Kitaev materials. You can have a spin one, and then one can derive all of those, remember the spin orbit coupling plus the lattice distortions. One can generate those terms spin one systems. I think these are still some of ongoing questions, like if you dope it, there might be a topological superconductor where also one can get some Majoranas there. And then of course the strain is always very interesting because one may end up with something totally different. So these are some of the questions that one can address in future. With that, I'm gonna end and thank you for your attention.
Very much. Questions?
So can we go back to the previous slide? So for this...
this one here?
So for this flux state, so what's this band structure of Majorana fermion?
So we've done some calculation on that. This one, because you are making a three-fold, you have like a three, unicell is tripled.
Yeah.
The sum number here is three. In other words, Majorana dispersion will have something interesting, like a node and so on. And this was,
I mean, without gauge field, what's the band? Without a magnetic field, what's the band structure?
Okay, so that one has the node in it. Some node. I don't remember which one, but it has some particular node.
It's in Kitaev's paper, right?
Yeah, no. This is in the Kitaev paper. Majorana dispersions are not in a Kitaev paper. Actually, it is one of my students. PhD exam report. He's going to present it tomorrow. He has to pass, so hopefully that. So he's done the calculation. It's a simple calculation, but you just plug in. It's a non-interacting Majoranas, and you just add the visons and then calculate it. Yeah, it has some dispersions.
So,
the nodal distance.
It looks like that figure has less symmetry. So somehow the Majorana nodes are still protected?
Yeah, so some of them, so the one that he has calculated is one of this, and then he has done that one, this one, and then one. There is nothing, the no flux and the one flux and so on. But yes, so I think that the node were presented in few of them. I'm not really sure which, there was a node, that for sure, among the ones that he has taken into account. I think there were one of this that he has looked at it too. But I know, despite that the symmetry is broken, well, at least this one has a triangular symmetry that you can see that there's a bigger honeycombs. And there were some of them has a node and some of them don't. So you have to, we had to add this three spin interaction terms which preserve the symmetry, and then you can calculate ton numbers. And I think that the one that I remember was that this one has a ton number 3. So it is the topological.
So probably without magnetic field, you have 6 nodes, probably.
Yeah, it has some, maybe, I don't know, it's a 6, but you can tell better than I do. Yes, it has a certain 2 times 3, so maybe it's, but you know, it even that, it doesn't have to be a 3, because you can cancel it 1 minus 1, 1, right? It can be 1 back to 1, but it has a different chunk numbers. So then you can sort of understand why this is a Fossil transition.
I have a question about the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
In the experiment, you have a field along the in-plane and out-of-plane.
Yeah.
Is it required that you must have both of them in order to get the half, the Hall effect, the half quantized Hall effect?
Yes, experimentally, you need some tilting angle to get the thermal hole, because you are basically putting the, you put the magnetic field, and then you have a current either parallel or perpendicular to a magnetic field, and then you are measuring the gradient of the temperature. So if I have an ideal 2D system without even thickness, I do need a little bit of angle to measure the gradient of temperature in the plane. So they do need a little bit of angle. They do need both in plane and out of plane. Theoretically, of course, you can calculate without the angle. Yeah. But if you don't have an angle, I don't find any intermediate equitative spin liquid. It just become totally polarized.
Even with in plane only?
It's just within in plane, yes. So that part is not, you know, the quantitative, there is some quantitative discrepancy between theory and the experiment.
Can we go back to the phase diagram with the H and gamma?
H and gamma?
Yeah, in the packet. Yeah, something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to understand, like, what is the significance of this Wilson loop, like, order parameter, and like, you know, it doesn't seem like that. So like the triangles, for example, on the top,
mm-hmm.
You know, the expectation of WP appears
mm-hmm.
continuous across that. So
mm-hmm.
it's actually changing across that phase boundary.
Yeah, okay, so this isn't, okay, WP is not a Wilson loop. It's this expectation values.
Right, but
mm-hmm.
yeah. I mean,
so. In a sense that, so this is the, on a plaquette, 6 x sigma, x sigma, y sigma, z sigma, and
right.
so on. So if I apply the field along the 1, 1, 1, let's now look at these colors, because if I apply it along the 1, 1, 1, eventually it'll approach to the, if I have a very, very big field, you know, it's all polarized along the 1, 1, 1. So I'll have some point has to go to a, well, classically it has to go to 0 eventually, because I don't even have sigma x component. No, it has 1, approaching to 1, because I have sigma x. Okay, 1, 1, 1 is sigma x, sigma y, sigma j. So I have all of those components.
Right.
Okay, so what is the significance of this? Is just that, okay, so here is significance is that WP commute with Hamiltonian. So that's the significance. Here, I don't think so. This is simply a magnetic field effect. So you have something finite. The reason that this triangle doesn't follow here is, which I don't actually know exactly why, but it probably come up with a finite size. Also, it can be due to the angle here, Seta, that I'm having a finite 5-degree angles here. So that's not
there's no
clear.
Reason to expect they actually agree exactly. After all, that WP is not exactly an order parameter.
Nope.
Sort.
Yeah, so they don't have to accept this point, that this point here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pure point.
So just really quick, so how do you distinguish the phases in the ejector diagonalization? Like, how do you get the triangles? Right.
Oh, the triangle is this chi of h.
Oh.
So chi of h is exactly this one here. You have this peak here. So that will be one of those triangles here. And that triangle appears in this bump here.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how you can tell. Also in the DMLG, this one is even much sharper than
right.
what is shown. Yeah. So that's how it shall be. That's a thermodynamic quantity, of course. It's not thermodynamic limit at all. It's only a 24 site. But, and then these are just static correlations, instant correlations.
All right, let's thank Hye-young.
Okay. Thank you.